Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Wednesday edition, the Wednesday edition of Sports Time Radio rolling. Not a great way to start the podcast, huh? I'm the Big Jack. If you'd like to call in, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, since it is Wednesday, the new blog did go up this morning. So if you haven't had an opportunity to get over there and read it, it's hanging out right there for you at the top of the page. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you want to hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, I am out there on Twitter as well. You can find me at Burke Time. And you know how it is when I start alone, I always spell it out for you. B-U-R-K-E-T-I-M-E is what I am out there on the Twitterverse. But all right, as we know, the Red Sox picked up game one last night, a big 8-4 win. We have the lineups tonight, and I don't think there are many, if any, changes, obviously with the exception of the pitcher. I think I see two with the Red Sox, and one is just a position swap in the order. So here, let's run them down. Brian Dozier is going to lead off again at second base for the Dodgers. Justin Turner hits second and plays third. David Freese will hit third and play first. Manny Machado is in the cleanup spot at shortstop. Chris Taylor will hit fifth and play left field. Matt Kemp is the DH again. He'll hit sixth. Enrique, and again, I still don't understand why they don't call him Kiki. They call him Kiki on the broadcast. Hernandez, he'll hit seventh and play center. Yasiel Puig, again, is the eighth hitter in right field. And then Austin Barnes does the catching for the Dodgers and hits ninth. They're starting Hyun-Jin Ryu, who's been pretty good. They always say he seems to pitch better at home than on the road, but I believe he had a pretty decent start against the Brewers on the road. So, you know, we'll see at this point. And then this way they can give Walker Buehler an extra couple days and bring him back for game three. But all right, we swap over to the Red Sox here, and no surprise, they're going with Mookie Betts leading off playing right field. Andrew Benintendi, who's hitting a robust 800 through one game, will hit second and play left field. Steve Pierce, again, batting third, playing first base. J.D. Martinez is the cleanup hitter, and he'll DH. Xander Bogaerts is in the fifth spot at shortstop. Rafael Devers is at third base, hitting sixth. Ian Kinsler is at second base, hitting seventh. Jackie Bradley Jr. is up to the eighth spot, and he'll play center field. And then the only starter who's of any difference is Christian Vasquez. Will get the start for the Red Sox. He's doing the catching and hitting ninth. The Red Sox, of course, going with David Price. You know all about Price's postseason misgivings and stuff. So, you know, we don't really have to go into them. He is coming off his best postseason start, and I believe his first win as a starter. I want to say, so a lot of people think he's kind of exercised his demons there. You know, we'll see how it works out for him. Of course, you know, the schedule start is 7:09 again, Central Time. I actually don't think they started till about 7:15 yesterday, but that's kind of expected with these games. And, you know, that's just how these things go, I guess you could look at it. So we'll see if game two worked out any better than game one did for the Dodgers. Oh, Dan is here. Let's bring Dan in. Come on. There we go. You can be in now, Dan. It just took a little bit to propagate there.
Oh, sorry, I was late.
No big deal. Not like you didn't know what we were talking. I thought maybe you were afraid to come back because, you know, the Dodgers lost game one and you were concerned about the T-shirt issue already.
Well, I picked the winner, so.
Yes, you picked the Dodgers. See how that worked? So, yeah, no, you know, obviously, you got to see a lot more than I did. I found it quite humorous how they turned on Yasiel Puig in the first inning after he threw the ball to home plate to try to get it out instead of hitting the stuff, man. That took all of, what, 15 minutes for them to turn on him? I was just kind of like, yeah, nah, we don't want to throw guys out at home plate. Let's give runs up and let the other team score. You know, I guess the guy made it to second base and it's not exactly what you want, but, you know, come on. It's the first inning. Let's not destroy him already. But, man, I was just like, yep, they turned on him right away. Here we go. So,
what were they just waiting for that, though?
Yeah, you know, I'm sure they were. It was probably something they had in their notes to do something so we can rip on him. You know, then, of course, if he would have done something great, they would have talked about, you know, how he's the most incredible athlete they've ever seen. And, you know, or if he would have thrown him out, you know, it would have been, oh, you know, well, nobody would have been able to throw him out except for this guy. And, you know, so, yeah, they must kind of move cards there so they know which way to go. And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only issue with trying to throw him out was the speed of Mookie Betts.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, obviously in a perfect world, he's more of a long drive, so the off man can get out and maybe hold Benintendi at first base. And, you know, second run probably doesn't score later in the inning. But, you know, I mean, it was just so quick, I was like, holy cow, that, you know, that didn't take long for this being a nice little, you know, hey, we're all friends here type of World Series for the announcer just wanting to start stabbing guys. So I was like, So, and then could you, this is something you got to explain. Obviously, again, you got to see a lot more than I did, just like tonight, a lot more of it. Why was Joe Buck just kissing John Smoltz's ass so much in the booth? I wasn't paying that close of attention to him, but what was this talk about Smoltz would have so much success against the Dodger lineup because of their analytics and the way they, you know, they approach their at bat compared to the Red Sox? You know, I get that Smoltz is a Hall of Famer and everything, but let's maybe they could tone it down a little bit. I mean, it was like, I thought Joe Buck was giving his Hall of Fame speech there for a little bit. Or introduction.
I couldn't figure it out myself. We actually turned on something else, and I had the game on my iPad, so I mixed the commentary by Joe Buck. But, yeah, I did hear it early on. You know, the whole, oh, you would do great against this team. And, you know, I mean, it's easy to compare eras. You know, maybe he would have, but at the same token, you know, John Smoltz wasn't throwing 105 miles an hour every pitch. So,
yeah, you know let's. He wouldn't have played the Dodger lineup because he's right. So, you know, I mean, obviously he would have had a success against the lineup because they were loaded right hander. So I think every single one of their hitters was right-handed. You know, Smoltz would have got to see, you know, the Max with the coaches, you know, those kind of guys who magically appear in the lineup when the Dodgers face a right-handed starter. And I guess that must have slipped Joe Buck's mind when he was out there. So. But yeah, you know, no surprise that Joe Buck commentary ruined the game, right? You're not shocked by that at all?
No, I mean, I have friends on Facebook that were complaining about the same thing.
So yeah, you know, I'm kind of used to it by now. I actually did have to go away from it for a couple minutes and watch a few minutes of the Blackhawks game, just to kind of get a reprieve. That's how bad it got for me. So. But I wasn't gone too long. It was literally just a couple of minutes, so I didn't miss anything important at early going. But yeah, you know, I was, you know, obviously, Dan, I'm just starting to think that I'm just kind of stupid, because I stumbled across this article called 9 Moments That Made Game 1 a Thriller. And the first moment on here is Boston's lineup is simply relentless. Does that make a game thrilling, or does that just make them good?
I mean, it makes them good. I wouldn't say it was thrilling, but the way they played, I mean, it was on both sides. It was entertaining.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, it was humorous, because I know, you know, Boston jumped out to a 2-0 lead, and, you know, there were a lot of people I saw on my Twitter feed already, oh, this is it, they've already put the game away. I'm like, it's 2-0 in the first inning. What the hell are you guys talking about? But, you and I both know that's how people get, you know, and obviously the Dodgers made it a game until, Dan, the second most thrilling moment of the game, Eduardo Nunez broke it open. You know, Dan, I think this is going to be one of the most talked about issues with the World Series, is the fact that Roberts went to the lefty to face Devers and then didn't really counter the Nunez move. And I get it. Nunez is only hitting a .188, but Alex Wood doesn't have great success against right-hander. Should, you know, obviously hindsight is 20/20 at this point, but should have do you think Roberts should have countered in the moment?
I think it's possible, but I think also that one walk or whatever the situation was in the fifth, I think Kershaw could have finished it.
Well, you know,
and
then they were talking
the
about
outcome of the game.
Pedro Baez was throwing the ball so well, he should have just stuck with him. Okay, and again, you know, it's easy to look back and say, well, he should have done this and he should have done that. You know, it's just how things kind of turned out. But, you know, and then, you know, moment 3 here, Dan, this is another head-scratcher. It just says, and then there's Red Sox left fielder Andrew Benintendi. Maybe because – is it because he went 4-for-5? Is that what made him thrilling?
Yeah, well, you need an article to write about, right?
Yeah, I guess. You know, but, you know, he promised 9 moments, and he's only through 3, and he's already got a couple that have confused me. This one, I know you and I definitely don't think is thrilling, but it's bullpenning is here to stay. Dan, you know how much I hate the bullpen stuff. Why is that thrilling, that managers are going to overmanage their pitching staffs? How is that a thrill?
I guess if you enjoy biting your fingernails.
Yeah. So now this one, you know, if it would have been worded better, would actually be thrilling. Craig Kimbrel is fixed, and so is Joe Kelly. You know, I did do the Dan the Man condensed game, so I could see all of it this morning, and Kimbrel does look much better than he has. There was some talk of him tipping pitches against the Astros, and he looked like a shutdown closer last night. That's thrilling if you're a Red Sox fan or you happen to have the Red Sox in a bet, because that's big if they need him to close out a game. So, but yeah, other than that, I don't know. Six, Dan, is Martinez's excellent adventure. I guess they're talking about when JD fell rounding second and had to get back to the base. Was that thrilling that he fell down? Were you thrilled by that?
No, that's just stupid.
You know, and we finally get a Dodger one, Dan. Hey, they finally we're seven deep, and he finally decided to include the Dodgers in this. It says the Dodgers used all their lineup changes. Dan, none of these have been thrilling for me. number eight is Manny Machado answers the bell. I guess that's because he drove in three RBIs. So that's kind of thrilling if you're a Dodger fan. And then the last one, number nine, Dan, is they still love you, Dave, because Dave Roberts got cheers at the beginning of the game because obviously he's a former Red Sox World Series hero. Dan, I don't think, you know, if you looked at that, could any of them really been considered thrilling? I mean, they're bigger moments from the game, but I don't know if, with the exception of maybe Nunez's home run, were any of them thrilling?
No, not really.
You know, so, yeah, that was just kind of, maybe they needed a better article, maybe a better title. I don't know who his editor is, but maybe you come up with a better title next game and just go with, you know, nine moments that made game one instead of saying nine moments that made game one a thriller, because, you know, the only thriller I got out of that was thinking about Michael Jackson's song in my head because the video is cool. But, yeah, I don't know.
Well, then how can you even call game one a thriller when it isn't determining the series?
Yeah, it's hard to say with the potential six games to go that was thrilling. You know, well, he did say moments, so he was just trying to pick out specific moments. But yeah, I just don't. I think he did a poor job of picking out moments. You know, or maybe his definition of thrilling is different than mine. You know, because I mean, like I said, with the exception of the Nunez home run, which, you know, anytime something like that happens is thrilling. You know, what I didn't understand is why wasn't the Kemp home run in there? You know, I mean, that was a bomb off a great pitcher who had looked like he was back through the one inning. You know, he looked like he had his good stuff, and he did have his good slider. You know, Sale struck out seven guys in four innings. You'd think Matt Kemp hitting a home run would be pretty thrilling, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I thought that would have been on there when you said that we finally have a Dodgers thriller. But
I know you were.
You know.
Oh.
I was surprised. I was hoping it was Puig at first when I saw it.
Yeah, you know, sadly, I always root for Puig, you know, hoping he does good stuff just because I hate the fact, like I said, you know, I mentioned earlier that they just, you know, they turned on him like, I don't even have a good analogy for it, Dan. I mean, that was that was so quick, it wasn't even funny. I mean, one play and, you know, he's terrible. So.
And, well, you know, and it was he's been thrown at the cutoff man, and all of a sudden he stopped. But, you know, if you but you could also say Barnes was in great position to throw up and attend to get second, you know, but it was a bad throw. So, you know, at the end of the day, it would have been 7-4. So, to me, that one run doesn't make that big of a difference. But, you know, the one thing I thought you would be interested in this morning when I got in the car to warm it up, and I still had ESPN Radio on, so it was, you know, the morning show, and they had Jessica Mendoza on there. And I don't know who asked her this question. I don't know if Golic was not there because it didn't sound like Golic, but they were talking about some of the misplays in the outfield by, I believe, Bellinger. And the topic about the fact that Major League Baseball is the only sport where all the stadiums aren't uniform and blah, 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 blah. So, of course, you know, I tweeted them and asked, you know, how much fun it would be if, you know, basically what would be the point or how lame would it be if all 30 parks were identical cookie cutters. And, I didn't get a response, but, immediately I just switched channels, let my car warm up, and walked away. Because I'm like, okay, I would have listened to you on my ride, and, because of the World Series talk and whatnot, but once I heard that, I was done with it. You know, have you heard any of that BS about the parks again being all the same? You know, aside from, again, like I said, it would be lame. Not only how many billions of dollars would it cost to reconfigure every stadium to be exactly the same?
Well, that, you know, the fun part is what stadium rules do we use? You know, every stadium is like which stadium? You know, how do we universally work that out? And then obviously, you know, places like Fenway and Wrigley, they're a little confined with what they can do considering, it's in the middle of a city. So, you know, you can't exactly decide to, blow up a city block because you got to make a change to the ballpark. So, yeah, obviously, yeah, it's incredibly small-minded and stupid thinking, but that's no surprise. But, like, unlike you, luckily for me, it takes me 5 minutes to get to work, so I barely listen to one song on the radio, and if I happen to hit a commercial block, I'm home before I even realize what they're talking about. So, yeah, no, I haven't had to deal with too much stupidity on the radio lately.
Well, I mean, the only solution would be to have every American League team model themselves after the Red Sox. And all the National League teams be like Wrigley Field.
See, wouldn't we all have to model ourselves after the Yankees?
You could think about it, but, you'd have to go with the two oldest parks, in my view. So, every American League, team would have their own monster.
Yes.
I believe Crayola could help with that. So every team has their own colored green monster. And then, every National League team would have Ivy. And then you wouldn't have issues where, you never have an issue in the National League that had interference with home runs.
Right. So, yeah, but, then they would cry about the Ivy, so we would have to get rid of that. That would be the next thing. I just don't. Yeah, I don't understand why that's even an issue or a deal or anything like that. It's like, really? So, who think, why would anybody think that would be a good idea? I mean, one of the best things about baseball is going to a different park and seeing what it's like, right?
Yeah, well, that would completely take away the tourism effect of baseball.
Yeah.
If they were all the same, why would I even bother traveling, all the way west to, the Dodgers or the Padres? I don't care how bad the Padres are or how good they are. If I have the opportunity to go to San Diego, I'm going to San Diego.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's just one of, obviously through the years, I've heard some pretty stupid things. But, yeah, this definitely has to go up there with one of the dumber ones. I don't know why. I mean, why? Because Jock Peterson misplayed a fly ball down the left field line and you wanted the Dodgers to win. So now all the parks have to be the same. What I don't think this idiot realizes, and I don't know which one of these morons said it, but if they were playing in L.A., he wouldn't have gotten to that ball because he would have been playing deeper. So it would have just legitimately fell in for a double instead of it going off his glove and into the stands. So, You know, I don't know who knows with these idiots. It's just, yes, let's make them all the same size. And then, you know, Dan, the next thing then is every player has to be the same height, right? So.
Well, no, you would do it position specific. You know, first and third baseman can only be, you know, such and such height between this and that, and the middle infield could be a certain height. All your catchers would be about 5'9", right?
Yes. Yes, they'd all be fire plugs, you know. So, you know, just kind of how it goes. But, you know, the big question, you know, more pertaining back to baseball, Dan, you know, obviously I don't – it's not a need win for the Dodgers, but how big of a game is this for them to win? You know, you get the split and then you go home for three. I mean, big deal, little deal, no deal?
I wouldn't say it's a huge deal, big deal, but, you know, slightly a little big deal, a little big.
And now they're doing 2-3-2 again, right? They're sticking to that schedule. I'm not going to mess this one up this time.
No, you know, but like we've both learned in today's world, don't assume anything until you check the sources, and the survey says yes, 2-3-2.
Yeah, because then, you know, obviously a Dodger win changes the whole landscape, because then they can actually go without having to come back, you know, to Boston if, you know, they were able to just win out at home. I know it's, you know, not the easiest thing to do, but that's, you know, the setup you would like, of course.
Yeah, and I think that's where it could be a bigger deal to have the Dodgers win tonight, because if they could potentially – you know, sweep the Red Sox in L.A., then they get to win at home. Other than that, you know, it's a seven-game series, and obviously you'd kind of rather travel home with a one-on-one. Hopefully that momentum kind of carries you over. But I don't know. I just still believe that part of the issue is the pull on the pitcher so early. I mean,
yeah.
You literally have the two best left-handed pitchers hands down in the game today, and neither one went past, you know, well, they both went into the fifth inning, but neither one completed it. And I get it. You know, they even said Chris Sale knew by that moment that walk took him out of the game. It's just, I don't know, it's kind of frustrating, it's kind of irritating that that's what the game has turned into.
Well, you know, I understood with Sale a little more. You know, he had been out and he's coming off the whatever it was with the stomach thing, you know, who knows what they had actually going on there. So I kind of figured he was in for a short outing, you know, with Kershaw, you just never know. I mean, you know, and especially now, like you said, I mean, everybody loves their bullpen.
Well, I don't even want to say that everyone loves their bullpen. Everyone just loves to rely so deeply on these analytics. And you've got John Smoltz upstairs, and if John Smoltz were in one of these games for either one of the teams, how many innings would he have gone? He definitely would have went past the fifth inning. You know, and that's kind of one of the things that, you know, takes away from the game. And the whole part of Bud Selig's successor, which I forgot his name for some reason. Pace to play. So you took away mound visits. What did that really affect other than Wilson Contreras? You know what I mean? It really didn't do anything.
Mound visits and don't forget intentional walk.
Yeah. So, big deal. I mean, okay, the intentional walk, I don't even know why they even – it shouldn't have been a big deal. That should have just happened. You know, I mean, we didn't even have to talk about it. Oh, you know, you no longer have to throw the four pitches? No. Okay, next. You know, but it was kind of like this big deal. But so you eliminate the mound visits. Well, so what does that change? Because every time the manager goes out to the mound and replaces a pitcher, that adds time to the game. With all the pitching changes, would that game have still gone 3 hours and 52 minutes? I believe that was the exact timing.
Yeah, you know, and then obviously, you know, being the, you know, the playoffs, there's, you know, a little few more commercial breaks, you know, all the other stuff that kind of, you know, factors in, because this is the time where baseball, you know, makes its money. So
I couldn't do it, though. I ended up just going to bed at 10 and just calling it a night.
Yeah, it, you know, and I, you know, I can understand if, you know, fans in the Midwest or, you know, wherever you are, you know, if your team's not in it, it can be tough to stay up for, you know, for the entire game like that. And, you know, that's, you know, still the thing that drives me nuts is, you know, what's one of the things they say, well, you know, we've got to get baseball to the younger audience. There's not one kid who wasn't maybe a Dodger or a Red Sox fan, and even in that case you wonder, who was up until the end of that game.
Especially game one. As thrilling moments as they add, you know, that's part of the reason I didn't stay up, because why? It's game one. Dodgers lose, oh, that sucks, but it's only game one.
So, yeah, you know, and I keep thinking that every time, because, like, I was watching it, and, you know, they actually started pretty close on time. I think they got going about 7:15, so they were only about 5 or 6 minutes late, which is fantastic for game one with all the stuff that, you know, kind of goes on before game one. But, yeah, you know, just looking at it, it's like, yeah, you know, this is a four-hour game. We're not going to be done till 11:30. Who's going to see the end of this? I mean, imagine if it went into extra innings.
Yeah,
you know,
well, and imagine
they could be playing when I get up for work.
Yeah, but they wouldn't have any pitchers, so you got to wonder how that would work. You know, because eventually, you know, extra innings is going to be taken out of the game.
Uh-oh, did we lose Dan? Uh-oh. Dan, where did you go? I can't hear you. Oh, there he goes. Dan fell off, so we'll wait for Dan to come back, because he was just starting to make his point, and he went kerplunk. It is Wednesday, though. Wednesday is normally the notorious day where we have internet issues. So all in all, it hasn't been too bad. You know, just one of those things. You know, again, it does happen. Here we go. We'll roll Dan back in here, hopefully. And yeah, you just started making your point, and you cut off, Dan. All I heard was extra innings are going to be, and then you were gone.
Yeah, I got the beep, beep, call failure. Well, as I was saying, extra innings are going to be eliminated sooner than later simply for the fact that you're not going to be able to go past the 13th inning. And everyone's going, well, why? Well, because once you get to the 13th inning, chances are with the way today's game is played, your starting pitcher went only to the fifth inning, may have got a third of that inning, so fifth inning through the ninth inning, you quite possibly can have used up to six pitchers. So if you only carry, you know, in a regular season game, you're not going to be using your starters. And that just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, so if you use six guys, you knock off the other four, we're already at 10. So once you get into the 10th, 11th inning, now you're down to, what, two pitchers, three maybe? So then you start cycling through you know, then you think, well, we could use a position player. Well, no, we can't, because the only position player left is the third catcher. You know, so if you carry a third catcher. So, I mean, and I foresee it with the way pitching is handled now. Take a 30-man roster, you know, extra innings are, they're going to have to cap it off, because it's going to be impossible to have an extra inning game. Which, I mean, at the end of the day, with 162 games, is it really all that bad to have ties?
Can't they just go to Ohtani and let him pitch and win the game for you?
Yeah, but then he can't bat anymore.
I don't know. They can set it up where he can still bat. And, you know, they lose the bat. You know, that wouldn't be a problem. You know,
the Madison,
I mean,
Bob
obviously,
Gardner.
You can't do it next year, but, you know, I mean, that would be the way to go. We just run Ohtani out there, and he takes care of everything. So, yeah, you know, him and Bumgartner and the kid from Cincinnati, what is it, the reliever, DiLorenzo? Who's a pretty good hitter. You know, you run those guys out there, and, you know, you make all the pitchers would have to develop into hitters. Imagine what that would be like. We'd have to have pitchers hit and run the bases, and they would actually have to be athletes, and we wouldn't get to listen to the announcers complain about the National League game where, you know, oh, well, I can't believe these guys actually have to do this, and, you know, why are they out there, you know, running like, you know, it's like, well, they're professional athletes. Like, I kind of thought running was part of the deal, but, you know, maybe not. And, you know, like, I know we've said it a bazillion times here, but, you know, I'm sure you people all remember that normally one of the best athletes on your little league team or even your high school team was the pitcher. And, you know, he played, you know, shortstop or center field, or in some cases he was a catcher. You know, I know, you know, lots of pitchers who caught on their off days, which was just kind of strange when you think about the arm wear and tear. But, you know, yeah, and now, you know, they're treated like glass, and, you know, they're, you know, I mean, it's to the point where they're not even allowed to catch pop-ups, you know, and it's just kind of like, wait, really? You can't catch a pop-up anymore, even though, you know, there still are a lot of pitchers who shag fly balls in warm-ups. So, you know, I don't know how the, you know, the explanation kind of fits or falls into it when you think about it. I mean, the guy goes from being, okay, well, you know, he's, you know, a top quality hitter in high school, and he's a great athlete, and, you know, they go to college and they get to play a little, and, you know, all of a sudden you're drafted and you no longer know how to hit the baseball. Yeah, okay. What the hell happened? So that's, you know, that's just what I need to know. What happened? So, but yeah, I guess just kind of how it goes now. I don't know what goes with it, but that could be the positive, Dan, is pitchers would actually have to learn how to hit.
Well, oddly, I heard a rumor that, well, not a rumor, but that Ohtani, if his experiment becomes a little bit more successful, that we may see more of that in the future. Because I think you and I both wondered more so how's it going to work in the American League.
Yeah, that would be kind of odd. But, you know, like we talked about it a little yesterday, we were talking about the Reds, and, you know, they drafted that Hunter Green a couple years ago. And they actually had to make the decision, is it going to be a pitcher or is it going to be a shortstop? And they chose pitcher. maybe he's the guy that, you know, comes up and is, you know, allowed to do both, possibly.
It's possible. I think it's, you know, now that we've seen how the Angels are doing it, I think it's more, that situation is actually going to be more geared towards the American League with the DH.
Yeah, you got to think it'll be a lot tougher in the National League because where do you play the guy? You know, I mean, what, he pitches one day, he plays the outfield 3 days a week, and then he rests? You know, or does he, you know, do you dare play him at third or first? Or, you know, that could be really, really difficult in the National League.
Yeah, well, to me, I, like you said, I think you'd see him more in, what is that, right? Left field? Or right field? I don't know.
Yeah, probably left field.
You know, the challenge, though, also is, will he throw out his arm? trying to make a Yasiel Puig-type play. And then infield, you know, in the middle infield, while the safety of the game has deemed that you can no longer play like the old days, there's still that, you know, worrisome of, you know, being injured. So the more I look at it, the less I feel that we'll see it happen in the National League. Under the pretense, though, that if you have a pitcher who can hit, you know, he might be more of your, you know, that kind of gives you that extra bench player, quite possibly.
I don't know if
I'm to come off the bench and hit.
Straight to the American League.
Well, you know what I mean? In a situation where we're two men on and you've got the pitcher up to bat, why not replace him with the other pitcher? Because you could just throw in the outfielder, you know, whatever position you want. But if a pitcher plays the field, theoretically, I think the safest position would be first base.
Yeah. So, well, you know, I think, you know, in the National League, it might be something that could possibly be done more with a reliever, you know, because, I mean, the guy could go out there and, you know, say he played for six innings, seven innings. He could come in and pitch one inning and then go back to left field.
Yeah. Well, we've seen that happen a couple of times.
Well, I mean, with an actual pitcher, though, not with a position player. So.
No, I mean,
Travis Wood. Travis
Wood,
you know. That would get Travis Wood back in the game. Look at that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that would be a big plus. So, but, yeah, you know, I mean, it's you know, that would be the only positive out of it. But, yeah, it is interesting. You wonder what they will do now with, you know, bullpenning becoming such a big deal. Yeah, what do you do when you get 12, 13 innings deep and you're looking into your bullpen and the only thing you have left are your starters for the next three games? You know, what the hell do you do then? I mean, you know, what if it happens in an October game that you need to win?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, on the plus side there, at least you would have the expanded roster. So you would probably have some more pitchers floating around, but yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, I'm going to hate it, but it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it because, you know, the shorter starters go, the more difficult it is to kind of enjoy the game with, like you said, 8,000 pitching changes and also killing fantasy as well because there are no starting pitchers.
Well, you got to wonder how long before, you know, not just our league, but Yahoo or any other fantasy provider just eliminates quality start as a stat.
So, yeah, you know, it's definitely something, you know, we'll have to look at getting rid of next year in our league and swapping it out with a different stat because, I mean, how – God, I don't even know who had the most? You got any idea who had the most quality starts, or even close to what the number was? I mean,
no,
with the way it's handled, you know, with the way it's handled, does the guy get the 10? These days, I don't even know. Here, I'm gonna have to look it up real quick. Otherwise, it's gonna bother me. So,
well, you know, one of the other things too is with the way they handle pitching. You know, well, you could still use starting pitching and maybe closers. I don't know how it works, but it'll be interesting how fantasy will change too, especially when it comes to, you know, daily fantasy and, you know, the dollar, whatever league you're in for the day. You know, do we start instituting and, you know, eliminating pitching altogether and then just having team pitching? Almost like, you know, in football where we have, you know, defense, Bears defense, and you lump special teams into that. Does it come to that factor? So where, you know, you just go with, you know, the, let's just say for today, I'm just going to go with the Red Sox pitching, and you get so many points for, you know, the save, the win, and all that good stuff.
Oh, all right, Dan, here, I got it. It's actually not as bad as I think you and I thought it was. Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer actually each had 28 quality starts. Justin Verlander had 27, and then Kyle Freeland, Corey Kluber, and Aaron Nola had 25. There were 11 guys with 20 or more. So,
well, that's not too bad.
No. Not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I honestly thought that it was, literally, I thought it would be 10 or 15. I thought it would be that low. So, maybe they're okay for another year or so before we have to take away the quality start.
Well, you know, but you only named five pitchers, though, five or six, right?
Well, there are more guys on the list. I just didn't want them to, you know, the entire thing. So, you know, like I said, there were 11 guys who got into 20 or more. Obviously there's, the other guys who were there in the high teens, and, you know, while it's not great, it, you know, like it used to be, it's not, I don't think it's quite as devastating as I thought it was going to be.
Well, the quality start almost starts to turn into like the save stat.
Yeah.
Or the hold.
Yeah, well, you know what's weird is you think that's got to become a bigger stat, right? With all the relievers coming in, you know, it's got to be, those have got to become more important, right? You're going to need a reliever who can come in and shut the other team down.
And Tony Watson is no longer the hold guy.
So, you know, yeah, it's definitely a, definitely turning a different way. It's just going to be kind of interesting to see, you know, if or how baseball handles it, or, you know, who knows, maybe we'll get lucky and we'll get a pushback another way and a team decides to develop starters. At least I can, you know, we can only hope, right?
Yeah, we can only hope it gets better.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know what else to really wish for, or what do you look for?
Going to the doctor for getting.
You know, I guess we'll have to see. But, you know, Dan, humorously, you know, yesterday it might have been a couple of weeks ago, you and I were talking about the Raiders appearing to tank. You know, at this point, Dan, I'm guessing the Giants have now joined them. You know, they traded their former number one draft pick, one of their cornerbacks yesterday, the Saints. And then today they traded one of their top interior defensive linemen, who you have to love because his nickname is Snack, Damian Harrison. They shipped him off to Detroit. Oddly, while, you know, the Raiders are getting first-round picks back for their guys, you know, I think the Giants got a fifth and a seventh for the cornerback, and then I think they got a fifth for the defensive lineman. But a lot of people think it's just a salary dump. You know, Dan, we got to pick games every week. Do you think you'll be picking the Raiders or the Giants to win another game this year?
No, and sadly, I don't think I'll be able to unload Derek Carr on anybody. But I forgot to mention, I've got to run. So I don't know if you want to continue this topic on your own or wrap it up today.
Yeah, no, I can kind of run this out. I just wanted to know, you know, because we have to make a pick tomorrow, so
yeah,
we'll see how that goes. Dan is going to run away from us, so we will continue on. But I have a Raider fan I work with. So like, I was talking to him this morning, and he's been a Raider fan since we were kids. Him and I kind of grew up together, and you know, he's at the point now where it's number one pick or bust for the Raiders. You know, he wants them to get that top draft pick, and that's pretty much it. Now, obviously, you know, I think the Raiders are in a better situation than the Giants because they're going to hold their own draft pick, you know, which is going to be probably top three at the worst, you know, unless they get really, really lucky and find a way to beat somebody. You know, then they're going to have the Bears pick and the Cowboys pick. And now both those picks will probably guarantee be in the top, inside the top 20. You know, if things work out right, you know, one could be inside the top 15 and the other one may fall right inside the top 10 or right at 10. So they could have three, you know, guys who could be possible impact players. You know, the Giants just adding these later round picks, I mean, you know, it's always nice to acquire these draft picks and have them under your belt because you can use them to move around. You know, I mean, we see the Patriots every year at the draft trade draft picks for draft picks and just continue to stockpile. So, you know, it will give them some options, but, you know, obviously there's a lot of holes to fill now. I mean, your quarterback is aging. He's obviously taking the brunt of the blame for this, even though you know the deal. The quarterback gets too much credit when they win and too much blame when they lose. You know, and right now Eli's taking a lot of heat. Maybe we could see him traded. You know, Tom Coughlin does run the Jacksonville Jaguars. He won a couple Super Bowls with Eli. Maybe there's still a little bit of a flame there where Coughlin's willing to bring him in and, you know, see how it works out. I don't know Eli's contract situation off the top of my head, but anybody, when you listen to these guys, and anybody who says the Giants should have taken a quarterback over Saquon Barkley is just incredibly stupid. Imagine how much worse this team would be if they had a rookie quarterback sitting behind Eli right now and they didn't have a running game. You know, Barkley at times has been their only offense because it's been difficult to get Odell Beckham Jr. going. Take Barkley out of that equation. You know, and I know they're only 1-5, but like, they had a really good chance to beat Atlanta Monday night and just couldn't come through when needed. But, you know, that's the sign of a bad team. Not that Atlanta's a very good team either. I mean, I still consider them the stupidest team in football. But, you know, that's just me right now. You know, I always find one that's like that. So, you know, imagine the Giants without Saquon Barkley as their number one running back. you know, what they would they went with? Would they have went with Wayne Gallman? You know, would he be trying to carry the load back there? Or, oh, they had the guy with the I think his first name started with an O last year. He had a good game or two, because the only reason I remember is he was one of Mr. Fantasy's one-hit wonders that he thought we needed to pick up and glom onto, and he was going to lead our Money League team to a glorious victory. And I can't remember his name, but, you know, were they going to carry the load? You know, is that how it was, you know, that how it was going to work out? So, you know, Barkley was the right pick. And, you know, even if this is a wasted year for the Giants, you know, you can, the one thing about the NFL is you can rebuild very quickly. It's not like baseball where, you know, you're basically looking at a 5-year plan or, you know, whatever else you need to get going in baseball. Football, you can turn it around in a year or two, you know, with the right draft picks, and, you know, maybe you hit on an under-the-radar free agent signing or two. You know, it doesn't even have to be the top guy in the market. You know, you just find that guy who fills the hole you need and fits your system, and if he starts playing well for you, you know, well, hey, there you go. You know, things kind of work out for you. So, yeah, it can be turned around quickly. Obviously, they need to find Eli's successor, and I'm guessing that's what the number one pick is next year. Who's taking Eli's spot? You know, because I don't even know if he's under contract for next year. I think he probably is, but I don't know off the top of my head. So we'll have to see how that kind of goes. But yeah, I don't know. It gets baffling to me when, you know, oh well, you know, this was a bad choice. You know, really? So I don't know, but that's how it's going in New York and Oakland. You know, and I'm sure you probably saw the news. The Broncos did decide to release Chad Kelly, right? Double check his name here. Yes, Chad Kelly. We talked about it yesterday. He was arrested for criminal trespassing, so he's out of a job. Sadly, he has a history of this. He was thrown off a college team or two, and you know, it appears the situation just kind of continues to go on with him. And, you know, hopefully he'll get help and straighten things out, because, you know, there are people who think he has some talent and could be an NFL quarterback. So we'll just have to see, you know, again, if he can, you know, if he can get himself straightened out. You know, you kind of hope for the best. You don't want to see you know, anybody get, you know, get arrested, whoever it is. So we'll just, you know, again, hope for the best. You know, go get some help, Chad. Hopefully you can get your life turned around, and maybe somebody gives you a shot. Or, you know, there's always, you know, we have a couple new leagues coming out, so maybe there's life for him. Hello, look at that. I started this thing about myself. I'm going to go to the next one.